welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there with us. And of course, we always like to invite you to check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. And where else, Ava?
That would be Facebook.
That would be correct. And like us, please. We always like that. If you have any requests, please feel free to send it to us at info@thevalleyoutdoors.com. And some stories we like to cover across our listening audience all the way over as well. Michigan, we'll cover those, some stories there. But Minnesota, as well as Michigan, we're seeing some increases in the CWD prevalence rates. Southeast Minnesota right now is seeing a continued rise, unfortunately, and it's happening again. Southeast part of the state, if you're aware of your area, 646, 647, 648, and that's classified as an endemic, meaning at least 5% of the herd is infected. And a lot of these rates have jumped significantly, as we'll go through, and I kind of highlight some of the key pieces about this. What's interesting that comes out of this whole thing, Patrick Hagen from the Minnesota DNR Disease Response Department, with the level that they're at, they're feeling like culling these deer is not being effective in those areas that are seeing the increases, which obviously if you're culling and it's not doing anything but it's increasing the numbers, according to the disease predictive model from University of St. Thomas associate professor, once targeted culling stops, it's likely that the prevalence rates will continue to rise. While numbers are preliminary, the DNR reports that prevalence rates jumped to almost 8%. And that's a jump from 23, it was a 1.24%. 2024, it was 5.4%, and now it's almost 8%. So we have a steady increase in that CWD. And of course, it is a death sentence for deer. There's no recovery from that. And the more deer get affected, it's affected through saliva, through that, if they're feeding in the same areas. And that is a challenging piece of the puzzle. They wanted to make sure we were keeping estimates the same throughout the years, so that's why they're using two calculated together. They're using a couple different reports to try and make sure they're not missing something in that reporting rate. Their collective prevalence rates, 6% for 2025, an increase from 4.25 and 2.6 for the various pieces of the state that they did samplings. Prevalence rates beforehand, fewer cases. Twin City Metro, they've seen fewer. Prevalence rates 0.28 and less in 2022. So I should say we have less now than in 2022. So that was a big piece of, hey, we're going in the right direction. However, outstate, it is not happening, and it's not a positive for us. And as of last week, had 121 positive cases found in the state since July of last year. Increase of 96 positives from July 1st to June 30th. Cases were even steeper jump from 63 in the 23-24 window. So, I don't know, Ava. This is kind of crappy.
Yeah, it's not getting any better, is it?
No, and partnership with Wildlife Services, a culling effort, has been one of the tools the agencies use to potentially reduce the chronic wasting disease spread in the focus areas. The DNR CWD response plan says that if the state's agency is directed, culling can occur to increase the probability of removing from the landscape and reduce disease transmission. They're going to do that. They're trying to weigh what they're going to do next and what it's going to look like next year for deer hunters. That's the tough part. One of the silver linings, however, the central Minnesota near Aiken, they've had no reported positive cases from 1,000, almost 1,100 surveys that were submitted. And this is the third year with no positives in the area. So that, I think, is definitely a positive scenario. And I think it needs to say, okay, what's going on in that zone that is different than everything else, and how do we manage to keep that zone free and clear from that CWD. You know, this is the other thing that I'm going to have to look up. You know, we talked about Wisconsin, and they were doing self-reporting, if you remember that correctly.
Yeah.
Remember we were talking about that? And then they stopped.
Yeah, because they were like, well, we don't really need to anymore. It's like,
and yeah, and part of it was they didn't want to do it because they were actually hoping that they didn't really want to highlight the fact that there was CWD in most of the territories along the river and further inland that had some massive deer, and it was a big draw for people to go hunt. And I think that's a frustrating piece of what's going on, and I think we really need to say the emperor's got no clothes, right?
So, well, I think it's, you know, ignorance is bliss, but definitely not the right way to go about it.
No, I don't.
Ignore the problem.
No, I completely agree. I think it, that, it, for the most part, is kind of a challenge I think we're going to have to look at in future shows, because that, in my mind, is a, I don't know. Yeah, it's a political.
Football?
Yeah. It, as many things that we talk about in the state is a political football,
yes.
You know. Oh, I was going to bring it up, too. Just as an aside, you know, they had the outdoor roundtable, the state's outdoor roundtable. They had 400 and some people that were there. They were talking about different regulations, things were going on, bow hunting, swans, invasives, aquatic invasive species, AWS. They were talking about that. Chemicals, how they were affecting it. And it sounds like they had applied some chemicals in the Lake Minnetonka area, and it was not. This is the interesting thing I think everybody needs to realize. As you do and impact the environment, and let's say you want to eliminate milfoil in this case. There's another one, Curly, I forget the name, Curly something. And not Curly and from the Three Stooges by any means. But anytime you eliminate through an outside venture, meaning you interfere with Mother Nature, you're going to create a void. And you certainly hope the void is going to be filled in by the positive version of what you would like to have come into that environment. And the unfortunate part is eliminating milfoil, they're not getting the uptake with the other weeds, water, aquatic vegetation that they're hoping for. And this is where the challenge comes in, as well as having it affect the chemicals that they tried to use, having it affect a negative effect on the fish populations at the same time. So jury's out on how we're going to end up doing this. And I think that's, in my opinion, is going to be a heavily looked at study and how to make this change significantly for homeowners. They want to have clean lakeshore. Fishermen, they like to have, obviously, habitat. And it's the battle of the who's going to win that particular part of the story. And right now, it's back to the mechanical removal of the weeds, cutting the weeds, and it doesn't help because it perpetuates the whole concept. So, not a good thing. Well, let's go jump into a good thing. How about that?
Yeah, please.
Good news is always a good thing, right? So, we have a positive report coming out of Michigan. Hunting incidents have declined during Michigan's 2025 seasons. Preliminary results from the 2025 hunting season indicate that Michigan's 650,000 hunters were relatively safe last year through all hunting seasons. So as of January 8th, the number of hunting incidents reported to the DNR Law Enforcement Division was 3 and only 1 fatality. In 2024, there were 5 and 1 fatality. The 10-year average of firearm incidents in Michigan between 2013 and 23 is a tad over 8 per year. So well below the average, and they won't have the final results for a couple more weeks, but early indicators is that it's their people are being safe in the field, and that's a positive.
Yes,
we really like to see that. Only having 3 is great, but it's still too many, said DNR Law Enforcement Division Recreational Safety gentleman, Tom Wanless. And I don't think we're going to get any more hunting incidents this year, but we want to take a couple more weeks to make sure there's nothing not reported as of yet. There were no reports during the spring turkey season, which ran from April 18th through June 7th, and 100,000 people were out hunting there. The first incident of the year happened during a grouse hunt. The shooter age was 57 and the victim was 60 years old. According to DNR, the four were walking spread out in a line when a bird was flushed by the dog. Hunters swung to shoot the bird and it went right to left, but they didn't clear the victim prior to the trigger. It struck in the chest and abdomen, and it was non-fatal. The person survived, recovered. A second incident was a 74-year-old shooter, and the victim was 81. They were hunting while sitting in blinds about 400 yards apart. One hunter stated he was shooting at a deer. It was standing between two blinds. Bullet struck the other hunter, who had stepped outside of his blind in the leg. Non-fatal as well. And a big one, obviously, is identifying your target, right?
I mean, that's where you start.
And the final, third one, firearms deer season, the shooter, obviously, and the victim, it was self-inflicted fatal accident, was 62 years old. Apparently, subject had the horizontally felled tree in an attempt to pull his gun over the tree by grabbing the barrel. The trigger was activated in the thick brush, pulled the gun up, and it pulled the trigger, and that was a unfortunate incident. So anytime you're moving through brush, obviously be aware of where that barrel is. And of course, the nice part is it was not necessarily, when we can see, any people shooting at, as they say, sound shooting, which is not a sound practice, as the saying goes, not a good thing at all. So, you know, what do you think? Should we do an anti-fishing group wanting to ban minnows, or do you want to do a little preface for the Olympics? Your choice.
I want to hear about the minnows.
Let's go for the minnows, and we'll put off the Olympic story for next week. Anti-fishing group seeks to ban minnows for bait. This is a gentleman I know had commented on before, Mike Schoonfeld. He had written this particular opinion article. Animal rights groups appear for two reasons. One is to provide jobs for the founders and the leaders of the group. Reason number two is to alleviate what they allege to be unwarranted abuse of fish or wildlife. If you look at the salaries and lifestyles of the founders and executives of most organizations, you'll learn quickly that these two reasons are not equally important. Reason two is important only to the point that reason one relies on duping the donors into believing that almost all the donations will be used to rescue lost pets, ensure livestock live happy lives, or to save wild animals from psychopathic hunters and anglers. Right? That's what we are.
Well, I mean, sometimes you just hit the head of the nail, you know?
Yeah. The Humane Society of the United States, now renamed Humane World for Animals, is one of the country's largest animal welfare nonprofits. The Human World for Animals, or HWA, spends less than 1% of its budget on pet shelters. Did you know that?
That's crazy. What do they spend money on? Food?
According to the Center for Consumer Freedom, majority of the donations they get are used for projects and promotions geared to solicit more donations. The salaries, perks, and expenses for their executive staff runs in the millions annually. They mostly spend money to generate money.
They spend money to make more money?
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of how the world works.
Remember, in this particular, the goal of animal welfare groups isn't to end hunting, fishing, or other activities that they deem offensive, but they would put them out of business and the income stream would dry up. Instead, they fan the flames by choosing small battles to fight. And in this particular case, they're trying to do that with banning the use of minnows or any other live fish as bait. Current activist from the group have picked specific states in the USA to focus the effort: Colorado, Delaware, New Hampshire, and New York. That was the year, and for 2026, that was what they're focusing on. In Europe, similar laws have been passed the Upstream Policies Group, from that would be in the UK or Europe. Fishing activists are hoping that the coupling of the use of live bait fish to potential spread of invasive species will be a winning combination. They produced several fake news research papers to back their claims. Go figure. What? Fake news. So, though no states in the U.S. currently ban live bait for minnows, most, including Michigan and states targeted, have already had restrictions regarding to what and how you can transport and utilize those baits. And I find it strange. No incidents reported during the in this particular case when we're dealing with this. Of any controversy at this particular point, but I don't know. I think as a whole, we're looking at a, shall we say, strange way to approach the banning of a resource. Yeah. I mean, they're
based off of fake news.
Well,
love it.
Yeah, and they're hoping, obviously, they're hoping that you don't do that. You're not able to get bait. You're hoping that they're able to stop the flow of bait, and that could be transferring it to leeches, of course, it, obviously willow cats. It's all in any bait fish that's being used, and of course that's going to go to ocean as well as inland waters at the same time. So we already have restrictions with the water, with the obviously the AWS, aquatic invasive AIS, and aquatic invasive species, so not transporting water from the lake, leave that in the lake, and exposing in minnows that have in contact with that. So, I don't know, Ava. I think.
What an interesting way to end the show.
I know. Isn't it kind of crazy? Like, are we going to ban minnows?
Yeah, good
really?
Idea.
I don't think so.
Dig it.
Everybody's like, oh, live bait performs just as well as minnows. Well, I've got to tell you guys right now, that is not the case. And same thing with worms. So, don't worry about that. Well, tell you what, that is a wrap for us. Next week, we're going to give you the highlights of the Olympic, what to look for, what to watch for Ava, myself, and Don. We are the Valley Outdoors. Hope you have a great, safe weekend, and do it outdoors.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.